Hello, this is Patter. Welcome to another episode of Motherfucklore. Before we get into today's episode, just a reminder that you can subscribe to support the podcast on patreon.com/Darok. If you do join us on Patreon, you'll get access to lots of exclusive Q&As, interviews, special episodes just for you, online chats, and you could even suggest what kind of topic you'd like to see the podcast cover. So please, please, please support the podcast. Patreon.com/Darok. And now, today's episode.
From the Headstuff Podcast Network, welcome. Fáilte go mo fhuclór. Podcast about words. Irish words, and words from Ireland. Hi, I'm Darok O'Shea.
And I'm Patter O'Quivonik.
How are you getting on, Patter?
Yep, not bad. Not bad at all. These long days have turned into long months. It feels like it's been 2020 for about 14 years now.
Tell me this. When you were growing up in Dublin in the 80s and 90s, did you ever get beaten up by bands of marauding orange men?
That was a regular occurrence round my way, you know. The local orange lodge would always be going around looking for people to beat up. Yeah, me and Bono, God, we had a terrible time of it.
One of the stories that came out this particular week, since we last released our episode on Queen of Hearts Lyra, a story came out in which a celebrated New Jersey singer-songwriter, John Bon Jovi, made a remark during an interview with Dax Shepard, I think it was, about he had a different sort of childhood than Bono would have had because Bono would have been beaten up by orange men.
Yep, that's what he said.
And this led to a certain amount of consternation. A lot of people, Bono has so little credit with the Irish public that a lot of people were quick to believe, oh yes, well, Bono obviously said this, or Bono either said this or cunningly implied this, or is the source of the story somehow. And people are saying, and other people are saying that, you know, that going as far to say, you know, that Northern Ireland is so far away, you know, the Joshua Tree is almost cultural appropriation of Northern Ireland by the way they allude to things. Whereas other people are saying, you know, in New Jersey, 2 hours drive isn't far away.
No, it's not. Like I've been to New Jersey. I've been to quite a few places in the US, and driving 45 minutes for breakfast is just, it's just part of the culture. There are no large distances there, whereas like whereas we look at like 80 miles up the road in Newry, it's like we act as if it's a foreign country, and it's yes, just up the road. Like, it's crazy. It's mad. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that there was some concert or some festival or something that saw John Bon Jovi and Bono shooting the shit, chewing the fat, and chatting away. And Bono probably spoofed him a little bit and just thought it would be funny to talk to this Italian-American and say, God, yeah, it was tough, yeah, growing up with the Orangemen going around looking for Catholics to beat up. I mean, Bono's not even Catholic, I'm almost certain. I know
Bono, like, is what they call a dolly mix, yeah.
Yeah, his parents were like what used to be called a mixed marriage back then, like one Church of Ireland, one Catholic. And like, I'm fairly sure he was raised going to Anglican services. Yeah. So he wouldn't have been, I mean, like, I don't know
what the Irishmen think
about the Anglican faith, but I'm pretty sure they weren't knocking around parts of Dublin looking to beat up Bono. If Bono was being chased around parts of Dublin being beat up, it's pretty certain it wasn't by Orangemen.
It's a funny thing. And on one level, we can't discount the possibility that there were a Church of Ireland raised bullies in Mount Temple who picked on him because he wasn't Catholic enough or wasn't Protestant enough or any of these things.
Yeah, I think that's still streets away from gangs of marauding Orangemen.
I think so, but in fairness, I do know sometimes when I'm abroad and I've heard people with a very slight grasp on with a very slight grasp on the Irish situation, refer to maybe Protestants as Orange Men, and they really aren't. What we do know is that in the 70s, when U2 were starting out, when they were called Feedback or whatever, they like U2, it's really important to say, they were never really cool in the Irish music scene. There was the kind of people who liked the Blades and the Boomtown Rats and Thin Lizzy always thought that U2 were dorks. And the Bono is a Pox thing has long roots since before they were famous, because they weren't cool. There are a bunch of these born again Christian guys. They weren't, you know, I guess they weren't truly punk. I think it's been said that the bands out of that time who became successful were the ones like Bob Geldof and Bono, the ones who actually saw starting a band as starting a business. And that was very kind of, that wasn't the attitude that some of the other lads had at all.
Yeah, they weren't rock and roll enough, I suppose.
No, they weren't, but it's a... And it's an interesting thing, I suppose, that I find it always interesting. First of all, I suppose that there's two things, one of which is how little credit Bono has with the Irish public, which it always fascinates me that, like, if I think that, say, there's many things that I think people, Bono would be accused of, that people would accept straight away without appropriate scrutiny. And that's one issue.
Like, for example, if someone were to accuse him of legal tax avoidance, I think we'd all believe that one.
Well, this is the thing. And Claude and I mentioned this before in previous episodes that, like, Tina Turner lives in Zurich for tax reasons. The Rolling Stones moved to France to record Exile Main Street in a chateau there to avoid tax. Tax evasion is as much a part of rock and roll as various as intoxicants and throwing
televisions out hotel room windows.
Yeah, but. Drifting slightly, but the other point, I suppose, is with the amount, how much is it appropriate for Irish people to expect people from abroad who don't live here to know about Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's not about expecting people to know about Ireland. It's just kind of expecting people who don't know about Ireland not to talk a bunch of claptrap about Ireland is the only thing. Like this, you know, if you don't know anything about Ireland, it's probably safe not to assume that every single person who grew up in Ireland in the 60s and 70s was being beaten by gangs of marauding Orangemen, which isn't even a great representation of the Troubles in the first place. Bad enough to assume that everybody on the island of Ireland was affected directly by the Troubles. It works to assume that the Troubles can be simplified to gangs of marauding Orangemen looking for Catholics to beat up. But that said, right? If we were to talk about an artist from any country and just assume that they were involved in the only thing we know of that country, God, isn't it great that Britney Spears survived the LA riots?
Well, and that's a funny one, I suppose, in that you do see this kind of whipped out sometimes in that. Was it Julio Iglesias? Didn't he sing for... he represented Franco Spain in the Eurovision.
Yes.
And some people draw a connection that this meant he was... he either acquiesced or supported Franco. But we don't actually know what he actually privately thought. We don't know what is if him refusing to represent Spain in the Eurovision would have actually helped bring Franco down earlier, or at all.
I mean, yeah, he was a rich entertainer in Spain, one of the top record sellers in Spanish music history, and one of their true breakout artists. So, I mean, probably safe to say he didn't have too much of a public opinion on the status quo. He seemed to be kind of... I mean, he left Spain. He moved to America when he became an international celebrity. So he did leave Spain. I don't know if he left Spain early enough or if he left Spain because of Franco. I don't know. Listen, all we know is that he went to the Eurovision Song Contest and Dana kicked his arse.
She sure did. And, you know, and Dana, there's someone else who had a... she grew up in Derry during a troublesome time, and yeah, and it must have affected her, because she kind of
something must have affected her at some stage.
That's an extraordinary figure, and Derry is obviously famous for Halloween. Dana's hometown Derry is famous for
obviously
Halloween.
Obviously, is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence.
No, some people would say that Derry is the hardest Halloween in town in Ireland. Nowhere does Halloween quite like it.
Oh, I imagine every town in Ireland would dispute that sentence you just said.
Oh no, they can go to Derry. They can go to Derry and they can see it done proper. And yes, and Derry kept that tradition alive, particularly at a time when certain elements in the six counties were trying to get Guy Fawkes Day to happen. Instead, Halloween held hard in Derry. And so Halloween is obviously Iasauna. And if you look at Twitter at the moment, a lot of people have pumpkins or Frankensteins or bats or things in there. And they have a festive usernames for the month of October. But Samhain is actually November.
Well, yeah, because Samhain and yeah. Yeah, that does piss me off, to be honest with you. People conflating like Iahauna with the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain, or more usually, the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain.
Samhain.
I'm only kidding. Only kidding. You know, you should pronounce it correctly, but I'm only mocking. It's with love. It's with love. It's with love. You guys love Samhain. That's fantastic. Yeah. I think it's probably down to Twitter or maybe just the onlineness of it all, the Halloween name and everything, and this sort of market creep that Halloween has gone a month long, that it's become the spooky month leading up to the day itself, Halloween. October being the spooky month doesn't really tally with the fact that Samhain is not the Irish for October, it's the Irish for November, and Iahauna, Halloween, Ian in that being Eve, the day before. It's the day before All Hallows Day, it's the day before Samhain. So Samhain isn't spooky, really, is the kind of point we should be addressing here. It's not. It's not spooky.
Do you have a Halloween name?
I've gone with it this year. I've gone with Peter Cavan. Ah, real monsters.
Well, on my normal kind of Count Dracula, which is what I normally use, but I've decided on the Irish for to use one translation that came up last year. I did a spooky thread for Halloween, and one I decided to translate Frankenstein to Irish as Pontius Einstein.
I got
a huge reaction to it. Some people lost their fucking minds. They were like, that's not a real word, man.
Of course it's not a real word.
But I figured I'm going to do this one for the people who will get it. You know, you can't over explain everything. Some people demanded explanations. Some people said, I've googled this everywhere and I haven't found it.
I think that's the problem. People ascribe authority to well-meaning people on the internet, and they don't realize that we're just a bunch of normal people just doing normal stuff, like just having Halloween names and things, you know, that there's no academic basis for Prunchies and Stein.
Prunchies Einstein is, I just think it's a funny, it's a dad joke. And in the same thread, I had said that, you know, I had already indicated that some of the entries were glib. There was the Irish for vampire as vampire, but the sexy vampire. And we know they're slightly different from other ones, as a vampire with a BH. And I did that just for, you know, a bit of fan service. And you know, why not?
Give them what they want, because apparently what they want is your sense of humor.
What they want is BHs fighting V's. They want Cobble. They want Peg and Devalera getting married.
Give people Cuddle, man. That's what they want. And for some people, if you don't like Cuddle, then it's scary Cuddle. It's spooky Cuddle for Halloween. It's Iahauna Cuddle.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I saw somebody in a desperate attempt to get some Twitter numbers trying to talk about Cuddle on the internet. I was like, oh, God, I mean, get some self-respect. Imagine trying to play up on people's strong food opinions to get some internet numbers.
Yeah. You're throwing a lot of stones in that glass house of yours. Lord.
So tell me, Pater, if Samhain, meaning November, is as interesting as it is, do the other months of the year have their own stories?
Yeah, well, the Irish calendar is broken up into four quarters, the four seasons, Giva, Arach, Saura, August 4, winter, spring, summer, and fall, as James Taylor said. And every single one starts with one of the great Celtic festivals, one of the great Gaelic Irish festivals. So there's Samhain to start the winter. Imbolc is the name of the spring festival, but that has sort of that's gone out of our vernacular now. Imbolc is not the name of a month. We have Fiaura instead, and then we have Bealtaine is the start of the summer, and Lunasa is the start of the harvest season. It's the start of the autumn. And you know, funny enough, there's this annual debate every year: like, is winter November, December, and January, or is it December, January, and February? You know, is spring March, April, and May, or is it February, March, and April? What is summer? Is it June, July, and August, or is it May, June, July? And there's no ambiguity in the Irish calendar, because in four, where we are right now, Lilin on Oish, it starts in Lunasa, and then you have Mian 4, September is middle harvest, and October is Dara 4, end harvest. So yeah, there you go. 4 ends at the end of Dara 4. Autumn is August, September, October. I will brook no dissent on this matter. And the day after Halloween is the start of winter. 1st of November is the start of winter. That's the end of it. There's no debate. That's that.
Absolutely. That's when Mariah Carey rolls out of bed and starts singing her famous song.
Oh man, I used to work in a chocolatiers many, many years ago. And we used to get the first advent calendars in before Halloween. Like, the first advent calendars would have a best before date before Christmas. Because, like, they just knew people aren't going to wait until December. They're just going to eat this because they're, you know, because society as we know it has fallen. So, like, Christmas creep is real. It's very real. It's very real. And, like, you know, the Christmas store at Harrods in London opening in August and all that is kind of, it's indicative. But, I mean, it's kind of a little bit over the top. But realistically, we are going to start to see fucking Christmas stuff in the shops before Halloween again, aren't we?
We are, and I'm not a fan of Christmas creep. I think Christmas is better when it's contained within its month.
Yeah,
I've strong issues about Christmas songs and the amount of airplay they get. My view is that if someone told you, if you were on a charge of a radio station, you said, "Listen, there's four songs from 1974 that you're going to play 200 times over the space of the year," and you said, "Well, how about this song by Wizard and do it all in December?" Like, you wouldn't fucking do it. He'd say, "Have a bit of ABBA, you know, have a bit of something else." I mean, I think that, like, there's, generally speaking, and you really notice this now, the look back of a radio station is maybe 20 years or so. You might get kind of Hit Me Baby One More Time or something, you know, 20 years old, being played as part of on a somewhat regular rotation. Songs that are older than that, a lot less. And accept their Christmas songs, and they tend to be a lot, you know, significantly out of fashion.
Yeah, because nobody has any interest in new Christmas songs. Like, no interest at all.
You know why?
It stopped when what?
Top of the Pops basically died. Top of the Pops, there are no new Christmas songs from the post Top of the Pops era.
What about the Darknesses one? Is that post Top of the Pops, or was that sort of the end of Top of the Pops?
Don't Let the Bells End has never really caught on.
What about proper Crimbo brackets Selecta?
No, this is like Mr. Blobby and those other things. The
the novelty Christmas hit still exists then, obviously.
They do, and you find a song like "Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer" would is effectively kind of an American name, "Fuckalala," and wouldn't get any airplay at all, except for the fact that it is technically a Christmas song. And those are the real kind of problems, because a great song like "She Drives Me Crazy" by the Fine Young Cannibals, doesn't get airplay. You know, arguably a pop song you wouldn't change a single thing about. You know. great tune, doesn't get a month where it gets a solid airplay. And similarly, you know, it's a those are just perfect pop songs that just drift off playlists, and it's a shame. And speaking of, like, and obviously with Halloween coming up, there's two Halloween songs.
Are there Halloween songs?
There's two Halloween songs, and one of them is by an artist who is now regarded as a predator and who people don't want to support.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is Thriller really a Halloween song? I know it's spooky, I suppose.
Thriller is a Halloween song, and in fairness, I suppose it's, Thriller is a Halloween song, and the other one is the Monster Mash.
Yeah, well, the Monster Mash is a classic.
It is.
It's an absolute classic.
It is. It's used as an example. I'm pronouncing this right, Pat, a Pumanon.
I don't know if you are pronouncing that right, because I don't know what you're saying.
Basically, there's a work of art that tells the tale of its own creation is a Pumanon. This is the same thing happened to me with synecdoche or synecdoche. And I was like, I've seen this word written down. It's a great word. Love the word. Love using the word. Don't know how it's fucking pronounced.
It's the epitome of words like that.
I think, yeah, synecdoche or synecdoche.
Synecdoche is how to pronounce that one.
And yeah, but Pumanon and Ante, hopefully, Ante, will you send us a voice note?
Oh, look, put it in the show. I don't know because I don't know what you're saying.
We'll put it in the show notes. But basically, yes, if there's, and obviously we are, this is something, it's important for us to actually, I want to disclose this so that people know, yes, we on Motherfucker as well as everyone else, sometimes we see words and we don't know how to pronounce them. And it's good to just admit that fallibility and rather than pretend we know everything.
Yeah, I don't like jumping down people's throats for mispronunciations, because unless it's something very basic and obvious, but like most mispronunciations come from the fact that people have read the word, maybe not in their first language, and are just using it the way they think it should be pronounced.
Yeah.
Like I'll tell you a story. When I was a kid, I had a Thunderbirds annual, Gerry Anderson's Thunderbirds, good solid puppet-based TV show.
Oh, yes.
And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why Lady Penelope wasn't in the annual. Instead, there was this girl called Lady Penelope. I went like, where's Lady Penelope from the TV show? I got this, who's this Penelope? Because I'd never seen Penelope written down, obviously. Pop quiz, when do you think Thriller came out, considering it's a Halloween song?
I believe it came out in 1984.
Yeah, when though?
Oh, this is your thing. You're going to die hard me, aren't you? It didn't come out on Halloween.
You said it's a Halloween song. Yeah,
when did it come out on Halloween?
No, it came out on January 23rd, 1984. January 23rd. Like, you could not. If you said, we're going to release it in 1984, it's going to be the seventh and final single on the album, and we're going to release it in 1984, and you go, well, it's a very Halloween-y track, you could not pick a release date further from Halloween. Than January.
Yeah, but yeah, I suppose that's true. And similarly, Die Hard was originally released in summertime. I think it was a 4th of July release.
Die Hard is about Christmas, though. Explicitly. Yeah, exactly. It's explicitly about the meaning of Christmas.
Anyway, we're drifting a little bit, because what we are talking about is there aren't that many Halloween songs. Songs of the summer are a different thing, because songs of the summer just have to be about summer in a general way. And you get new ones every year.
Yeah, songs of the summer are like your summer soundtrack, and they're like related to a particular memory in your life, really, aren't they?
And spring, not many songs about spring. You got to go to Vivaldi for that kind of stuff.
I think Vivaldi covered the whole fucking year now, in fairness. Seasons, I'll have four of them, please. Thank you very much.
Vivaldi was a man after the Irish language's heart.
Yeah, just four of them. That's it. Yeah. And Vivaldi spring started in February. There will be no debate.
Okay, it's Jibs here from Pints of Malt. So our podcast is basically a group of Irish Nigerian lads who tell their stories, growing up in Ireland as well as Nigeria. And we share our experiences with all of y'all. We also add a bit of comedy as well, you know, to get y'all laughing, get y'all through the week. in these tough times that we are in. So y'all sit back and just, you know, enjoy the show.
As Jib said, we're the Pints of Malt podcast. You can find us on all streaming platforms, including the Headstuff Network.
Christmas, though, right? Christmas songs. I'm in favor of, again, let's go back to the Irish language. Let's look. What's the Irish for Christmas?
Nulug.
What's the Irish for December?
Mean and Nulug.
So just keep your Christmas songs in Mean and Nulug. Keep your Éireann Nulug in Mean and Nulug, and we'll all be happy, and we'll all have a great time, and it'll be 25 days long, but they'll be the 25 best days ever. Like, I'm willing to put my hands up and say, we've lost the battle on the 12 days of Christmas. That doesn't happen anymore. Christmas is as long as people want it to be, but we have... Yeah, we just, honestly, Christmas in September can do one.
Tell me this, it's the 12 days of Christmas, the first day Christmas Day?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So again, you've got kind of October, you've got Twitter Halloween situation there as well, where the entire kind of process of the Christmas season has, it's the end, what used to be the start is now the end.
Yeah, in a sense, not really. I mean, I still kind of go hard at it until Nulug na mBan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, there's no point not keeping her lit until Little Christmas.
Should January be renamed Mean and Nulug na mBan?
No. I don't think so. Should it? It seems like, because Mean and Nulug leads up to On Nulug.
Yeah.
But yeah, I suppose it starts with Nulug na mBan, more or less. It's on the 6th, isn't it? 6th of January. So Samhain starts with Samhain. Good question. Should it? I don't know.
We'll allow our listeners to advise us what they think on that one.
Yeah. Mean and Nulug na mBan. Actually, I don't like it, right? First of all, it very much ascribes masculine characteristics to Nulug then, because, you know, you would assume then that Nulug na mBan, there's a Nulug na mhar, which is not something that exists. Nulug is for everyone. And yeah, we don't subscribe to the binary, so it's not going to happen. Now, I'm going to reject it. Because of its outdated gender norms and heteronormativity.
Understood. So meander.
Meander, it remains from Januarius. We borrowed a lot from the Latin, actually. We borrowed an awful lot from the Latin.
This is what I was about to ask, because obviously the our druid pals, or our Celtic druids, as Terry Vox Aperniacum would say, they must have had a calendar if they were able to build Newgrange when they were all speaking home to each other.
Speaking home, oh Christ.
you can't build something like that at that level of precision for the 21st, for the solstice.
Yeah, no, there's
without some level of calendar understanding. So they must have had a structure of calendars with names.
There were Celtic calendars. There is no doubt about it. Like, they found one in France, like the Coligny calendar. Mm-hmm. They found one. It was made in Romano-Celtic Gaul in the 2nd century AD, and it had a 5-year calendar of solar and lunar movements, and it was incredibly complex. I suppose the only thing is, like, you can't presuppose one joined up Celtic culture. So you can't say that this calendar is exactly what was used in Ireland 5,000 years earlier when they were making Newgrange. That would be going a little bit too far. But there was some level of extreme calculation going on that was quite impressive for the time, and it was based around the calendar. And there's a reason we have 4 major Irish festivals, like the Irish cultural festivals, that divided the seasons. And that's, you know, somebody calculated when these had to happen.
Yeah.
And somebody calculated that we should have, I mean, we got the, probably got the 7-day week off the Romans.
They got it from the Babylonians.
I don't care where they got it.
The Romans were gas lads for nicking stuff.
But like we took a lot from them, and like there was a little bit of contact. Pre-Christian Ireland would have had a little bit of contact with Roman Britain and Roman Gaul, but mostly our contact with the Romans would have come from early Christian Ireland, and that constant contact with Rome, it has led to. I mean, Nullug, for example. Nullug comes from Natalicia, which is the Latin for birthday. And it's the same reason that in French it's Noel for Christmas, and in Portuguese it's Natal for Christmas, and Navidad in Spanish. Yeah. That it all comes from the same root, so that's where we get that. We get Anor, Fiora, Marta, and Yule, I think. We get Anor, Fiora, Marta, Ibron as well. That comes from Latin as well. So we have January, February, March, April, and then July are derived from the Latin, and December as well. The rest of it comes from our own traditions and calendars.
This is where it deviates. You know, where Bealtaine and what's it? No, Bealtaine and Meath.
Bealtaine, Meath comes from an old Irish word, mithim, meaning the middle month of the year. It wasn't very fucking imaginative, right? We had four Aaron festivals. Yeah. It's pretty Aaron Trone. Well, I mean, come on, this is a language that has the month of middle harvest and the month of end harvest. It's very prescriptive. There will be no debate. It is this. We'll have Lunasa at the harvest festival, then we have the middle month of the harvest, then we have the end month of the harvest, and then we're into the winter. Shut yourselves down, eat some pork for 3 months. And we'll see you at Imbolc for like February. It's very, but like our days of the week as well are similarly split. And we got the 7 day week, and we have De Lune from the Latin Dies Lunae, De Mort from Dies Martis, and then we get three Irish Gaelic Christian days: De Cadean, the first fast. Daredean, this is a really interesting one because it's a conjunction, it's a shortening of day ither da in, the day between two fasts. Ooh. And then Dehina means the day of the fast. So you had the day of the first fast, the day between two fasts, and then the day of the fast. And it goes back to the early Gaelic Christians would fast on a Wednesday and fast on a Friday. And, you know, it was a Christian tradition right up until the 20th century to have fish on a Friday, that it would be what was known as a black fast every Friday. It was not proper to eat meat on a Friday, which is how McDonald's invented the fillet of fish, coincidentally. It was invented in, I think, Philadelphia. A Catholic priest had a friend who ran a McDonald's franchise, and he said, would you ever come up with something so that my parishioners will stop eating fucking hamburgers on a Friday. So he came up with a fillet of fish.
A fillet for Philadelphia?
No, I doubt it. It's just how they say fillet over there in America. Actually, I've been watching, lockdown, I'm watching an awful lot of programs about food. An awful lot. And it's amazing how much American culinary terminology is influenced by the French. And not even in a good way. Like they say fillet instead of fillet all the time, which is just weird to me in an American accent. Like, just say fillet. It'd be nice. And then they say entree for main course, even though entree is the French for starter.
This is all because of Julia Child, isn't it?
Probably. She has a lot to answer for.
That's my understanding, is that there actually wasn't a huge wealth of American cookbooks before she came along, and she obviously was bringing a very French style to it. And yeah, that's I didn't realize fillet was influenced by a Catholic priest. Makes some sense.
They needed something to serve on a Friday. Dehina, the day of the fast. But then we go back to Latin, by the way, just to round off the week. The weekend is Latin. De Saturn is from Dies Saturni, the day of Saturn, the god. And De Donig is from the Latin Dies Dominicus, which means basically church day. Because if you look at there are some place names around the country, like Donnybrook and Donnycarney, and they're not named for Sundays, they're named for church. So the words Downach and Kill, for example, meaning church, they're interchangeable. So yes. You have some place names around Ireland that still have Donagh in them. So Donnybrook is the Irish for, well, it's the name for Donnybrook. Donnybrook is the English for it, more properly. Donnacarnic, the English for that is Donnycarney. And they come from, like, the church of, so De Donic, the day of the church. So we have a very Christianized, Latinized set of days. So, I mean, yeah. That's the problem with Irish, isn't it? You can't even have a day without it being either Latin or Christian.
Yeah, you can't have a day.
You just can't. And can't count the days. Can't do it.
And do we have any idea what these were called before the Romans got there and their attendant church? Because obviously the Latin and Latin traditions came to Ireland through the church, not through Roman soldiers.
Not through soldiers, but like I said, there was a. There was a lot of contact with Roman Britain. There was a lot of trade and commerce. They were our biggest trading partner, at the time. But I mean, geez, I suppose you see the problem is like the 7 day week is a Christian concept, a Judeo-Christian concept, at the very very least. Mm-hmm. I know that there was a study done in the 20s trying to find the oldest days of the week. I don't know, man, because it's like the concept of a week is so intertwined with that, you know. So I don't really know if we bothered to have a week before we had the names of days for the week.
This is, I suppose, something that always kind of surprised me, that we get a lot of our, in English, we get a lot of days of the week from kind of Scandinavian traditions, but we get the actual month days from kind of Roman traditions. And you think at one point, you know, somebody must have said, well, have a bit of this, but have a bit of that. Well, a bit of this for the days and a bit of this for the months. Like, yeah, see, there would have been a 7 day week in Hebrew. And they would have had similar things in Babylonians. They obviously built that around the month having the moon having four cycles, or having four stages before, but in between new moons. So the
sort of divide roughly 28 by four, and you get seven. So it's kind of, in one sense, if you're thinking that way and you're that sort of wired to the moon, as it were, it makes sense to have. To have that 7 days. I mean, in the Hebrew Bible, God creates the world in 7 days, resting on the seventh, proving that God was in fact in a trade union. So join a union, folks.
This is why it's important when we talk about the days of the week and the months of the year. It's really important to remember, yes, there are days of the week, but the weekend was given to you by unions.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
So our concept of time and our concept of time and calendars did originate from lunar cycles and from navigating the sea and from agriculture. But
you know what else comes from
how we build our time?
Yeah, you know what else comes from lunar cycles? The word lunatic.
That's right, because they thought the people who were insane were somehow linked to the movement
to the moon. Which is why when there's a full moon out, things are a little bit crazier.
They are indeed.
And if there's a full moon at Halloween, you better watch your back.
And there is a full moon this Halloween, so it's going to be bumper one.
It's not going to be the same, though, is it?
No, because of
it's
COVID.
It's not going to be the same because of COVID. Because, like, I swear to God, I hope nobody comes trick or treating, because I'm not buying in the fun size Milky Bars. I'm not doing it. Like, I'm not getting in the miniature Kit Kats. I'm not, because it's not happening. Because I'm terrified that there will be nobody coming to trick or treat, and I will have to eat the stuff myself, and it's not a good outcome for me.
That's right. And on that depressing note. We're going to have to wrap things up for today. Pat, thank you so much. I think we've all learned a lot about the months of the year and the days of the week.
I think we've learned a little bit about lunacy. We've had a particular insight into lunacy, which is nice.
Great stuff. So until the next time, it's a slán from me.
Agus slán wemse.
Mind yourselves.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Motherfucklore is a product of the Head Stuff Podcast Network and comes out every Friday. You can get feedback to us, questions, comments, suggestions, anything you want, really, to motherfucklore@headstuff.org. Also, just a reminder that you can support the podcast and gain access to exclusive chats, one-on-ones, and even suggest your own episode topic. Get on patreon.com/Darek. Until next Friday, Gurmila Magui, Slán.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
If Bono was accused of starting genocide, people would be like, hang on, maybe he did, you know, let's not rule it out straight away. But, you know, people are like this.
I'm going to distance myself from that comment in a big way.
Okay, well, we'll say, I'll